it's just an incredible hurricane. It has dropped. It has dropped 50 millibars in 10 hours. I apologize. This is just horrific.
Yes, it is. You've been warned.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KZO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman. Your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Before another Bradcast is changed today, thanks to climate change, I do want to hit a few points directly regarding the upcoming elections. Though sadly, much of the rest of our coverage, even about climate change, and both last week's deadly storm and the new deadly storm now set to plow into Florida are also affecting the presidential election. So that will no doubt play into some of our coverage today throughout the program. But voting is already underway for the 2024 presidential election and all of the other elections that are also taking place this year, including for every single seat in the U.S. House and a third of the U.S. Senate, plus statewide and local races in all 50 states. It is what I believe folks on both sides of the aisle are now referring to as the most important election of our lifetimes, perhaps in our history. And though we hear that a lot, I do not believe that that is actually an overstatement this year. I think it's true. So please vote, please help others that you know to vote, and please take the ramifications of your vote seriously. What happens between now and the close of polls on November 5th, what I refer to as phase one of this election, will affect the nation and the world for generations to come. Yes, it is that important. Now, Monday, October 7, is the last day to register to vote if you're not already registered in Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, amid both storm cleanup and preparations for yet another one there. We'll get to that in a moment. Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and American Samoa. Now, actually, it was supposed to have been the last day for registration in South Carolina, but that date has now been extended by about a week to October 14 because of the recovery efforts from Hurricane Helene. There are deadlines later this week when voter registration will cut off in Missouri, Oklahoma, and Delaware. In the great battleground state of North Carolina, which is still reeling from the fallout of last week's Hurricane Helene, which we will discuss shortly, before speaking with someone on the ground in Asheville today. That was, of course, Asheville among the hardest hit areas in all five or six states that are still reeling from last week's storm. But the deadline for online voter registration in North Carolina is also this week, October 11, unless that deadline is also extended due to Helene, as it was in South Carolina. But in North Carolina, voters are apparently allowed to register in person at the polls during early in-person voting from October 17 to November 2. So if they miss the October 11 online registration deadline, they'll have another chance, and perhaps that deadline will get extended thanks to a far-right Republican-controlled state legislature, however, which is decidedly not voter or democracy-friendly. I would not count on that happening there. Also quickly, as we've been covering in recent weeks, a number of the remarkable endorsements of Kamala Harris from folks on the right, like Dick and Liz Cheney, hundreds of former officials from the Republican presidential administrations of George W. Bush, Bush Sr., Ronald Reagan, and GOP presidential campaigns like those of John McCain and Mitt Romney, not to mention a host of folks from Donald Trump's own presidential administration who are endorsing the Harris-Walls ticket this year, having already worked with Donald Trump and already knowing better. Since I realize that some of those endorsements, however, may actually backfire to a certain extent and perhaps work against those folks who are still sort of undecided or considering voting third party or not at all, you know, folks on the left, and maybe they're not voting for Biden Harris-Walls because they dispute their the Biden-Harris position on Israel and Palestine. If that's the case, I just want to note this endorsement that came in over the weekend. A group of Muslim imams endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris in an open letter on Sunday, which NBC describes as a critical boost to her campaign as she steps up her efforts to win back disaffected Muslim voters amid the Israel-Hamas war. Monday marks 1 year since the horrific Hamas attack on southern Israel that killed some 1,200 people and resulted in Israel's offensive against Hamas in Gaza that has in turn resulted in more than 40,000 dead. Harris has faced widespread anger from Muslim and Arab voters over the Biden administration's support for Israel's war in Gaza, and the community could be critical in some battleground states, especially Michigan. The 25 Islamic religious leaders who signed this letter, released on Sunday, argue that Muslim voters have a duty to think logically about their voting decisions, and that backing Harris, quote, far outweighs the harms of the other options. Quote, she is a committed ceasefire candidate, they say, and is the best option for ending the bloodshed in Gaza and now Lebanon, they wrote. Quote, knowingly enabling someone like Donald Trump to return to office, whether by voting directly for him or for a third-party candidate, is both a moral and strategic failure, the Muslim clerics write. Particularly in swing states, a vote for a third party could enable Trump to win that state and therefore the election, they wrote. Given Trump's well-documented history of harming our communities and country, as well as what he has promised he will do to Muslims and Palestinians should he return, it is incumbent upon us not to allow our high emotions to dictate our actions to our detriment, the Muslim clerics ask. The letter goes on to argue that the leaders have, quote, a responsibility and amana not to place our community in harm's way. Several Muslim groups have endorsed anti-war third-party candidates like Jill Stein and Cornel West. Others started a movement called Abandon Harris to punish Democrats for the Biden administration's steadfast support for Israel. About 700,000 people, in fact, voted uncommitted in protest of President Joe Biden's policies during this year's Democratic primaries, and the delegates' request for a Palestinian speaker at the DNC over the summer was, in fact, denied. But Mohammed Al-Sanusi, a Muslim community leader who helped organize this pro-Harris letter, noted that he hopes the support from these religious leaders will make conflicted Muslims conflicted Muslim voters feel more like voting for Harris. Quote, "I am really hopeful that with this letter, a lot of people will change their minds," he said. "The momentum for Harris in the community is growing." The letter, of course, is the latest effort in the push on behalf of the Harris campaign to reach out to those voters after she met with Muslim community leaders in Michigan on Friday. Her running mate, Tim Walz, addressed a virtual event hosted by a pro-Harris Muslim Get Out the Vote group on Thursday. Also last week, the vice president's national security advisor met with Arab and Muslim community leaders in Washington. Nazrina Barkzi, the director of Muslim and Arab American Outreach for the campaign, for the Harris campaign, said in a statement, "The vice president is committed to work to earn every vote, unite our country, and to be a president for all Americans." She added, "Throughout her career, Vice President Harris has been steadfast in her support of our country's diverse Muslim community, including ensuring that they can live free from the hateful policies of the Trump administration." We will, I suspect, get back to the hateful and dangerous policies of Trump and his campaign and his supporters momentarily. But for now, here we go again. When we went to bed last night, it was a Category 1 hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. And by the time we woke up today here on the West Coast, Hurricane Milton was declared a Category 5. Five, echoing the rapid intensification over record warm waters that turned the monster storm Helene from a tropical storm to a Category 4 hurricane, also in less than 24 hours, before it slammed into Florida's Big Bend region in the Panhandle and then raked up the U.S. southeast to cause more than 230 deaths so far, a death toll that is still growing. Along with untold wind and mostly flood damage across at least six states where many are now, still today, grappling for clean water and facing power outages. So, no, this is not a rerun of the broadcast. This is a whole new deadly storm that ramped up again in a single day, which is now on a crash course with Florida yet again. And though Milton is not currently predicted to sort of blow up the eastern seaboard, it could be even more deadly than Helene, depending on its exact landfall location and timing on the west coast of Florida. Milton rapidly strengthened into a Cat 5 on Monday in the Gulf of Mexico on its path towards Florida, threatening a dangerous storm surge in, wait for it, Tampa Bay. That's bad. We'll tell you why in a second, but it has led to evacuation orders and long gas lines, lending more urgency to the cleanup from the previous storm, from Hurricane Helene, which swamped the same stretch of coastline less than 2 weeks ago. A hurricane warning was issued for parts of Mexico's Yucatan state, which expected to get sideswiped, and much of Florida's west coast was now under hurricane and storm surge watches as of Monday afternoon. Florida's Lake Okeechobee, which often floods during intense storms, was also under a hurricane watch. Quote, "This is the real deal here with Milton," said Tampa Mayor Jane Castor. She's trying to stress to the public how serious this is. She said, quote, "If you want to take on Mother Nature, she wins 100% of the time." That was at a news conference, adding to a CBS News local affiliate today.
"If Milton stays on the designated path, it will be catastrophic for our area."
"Will it be like anything that Tampa has ever seen?"
"It will not be, because I'm 64 years old, and Helene was the worst that I've seen in my 64 years. That was mostly a water issue. With Milton, we're going to have twice the storm surge, you know, up to 12 feet of water, and the wind on top of that."
"For people who are saying they're not going to evacuate, what is your message?"
"Yeah, that, you know, honestly, you can't deal with stupid."
Mayor Jane Castor in Tampa. Desi Doyen, aside from the Tampa Bay area, still rebounding and attempting to clean up considerable damage from Hurricane Helene a week or so ago, where 12 people died right in that area. Can you explain why a direct hit by Hurricane Milton on Tampa, which hasn't seen a direct hit in more than a century, why that could be so devastating, why that is the perfect storm that has a lot of folks in Florida very worried right
now? Oh, yes, they are on pins and needles right now. Tampa Bay is, I think, considered to be the most vulnerable metropolitan or even any area in the United States to a storm. It is uniquely vulnerable because it has a huge bay, then it's very low-lying, and that bay tends to funnel the storm surge and make it even more intense. It's also extensively vulnerable because it has a lot of waterfront population now and development. So many of these people have never seen an extreme storm hit that area. It is not in living memory, so they may have a false sense of security. Lots of buildings were also built before. They have a lot of old building stock that is that has been there since before the building codes were changed to make sure that they were more resilient to storms. So if Milton stays on its current track, it could very well be the worst storm to impact the Tampa area. That last big storm was in 1921. So 3 million people are now in that region. And the worst case scenario is if Milton makes a direct fall in the mouth of the Tampa Bay, or just to the north of it, and at high tide. So 12 miles difference in landfall to the north versus to the south would be the difference between a $100 billion storm or a $230 billion storm.
This is really the nightmare scenario.
It really is.
If it hits. So I hope people in Tampa are paying close attention. Now, Des, if this storm blew up from a Cat 1 to a Cat 5 in less than 24 hours, over the record warm Gulf waters. Is this one of those storms? Because it's going to be over the Gulf for a while, for the next couple of day and a half or two before it hits. Is this one of those storms that could finally make the argument that we need to add a Cat 6 to the Saffir-Simpson scale at this point?
Absolutely. You know, there is no Category 6 at this point. There have been discussions among meteorologists and the scientific community about perhaps that would be a good idea. But remember, you know, the category fit system only applies to wind speed, not to storms.
Yep.
And by far, the most deaths, something like 90% of the deaths from hurricanes come from water, not from wind. But however, for Helene, you know, Helene left behind a lot of debris. And so they're trying to get that debris cleared off the streets as fast as possible. They're having difficulty getting enough crews to do that because all of that debris will become projectiles.
Missiles. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's terrifying.
There's a lot that can go very, very wrong here. Even if Milton does decrease in category, it will still be extremely damaging.
At last check, Milton had maximum sustained winds of 160 miles per hour, according to the National Hurricane Center. The center could come ashore Wednesday night in the Tampa area, could remain a hurricane as it moves across Central Florida toward the Atlantic Ocean. That would largely spare the other states that were ravaged by Helene on its path from Florida to the Appalachian Mountains. But this one could sort of hop over the peninsula and back out into the Atlantic. Forecasters warn of a possible 8 to 12 foot storm surge in Tampa Bay and said flash and river flooding could result from 5 to 10 inches of rain in mainland Florida and the Keys, as with as much as 15 inches in some places. Here is how NBC Miami's chief meteorologist, Jim Morales, sounded this morning, sounding the alarm about what appears to be coming. Jim Morales, do you have that, Wendell, Q4? As you heard him at the top of the show, almost in tears, describing what was coming. Here we go.
It's just an incredible, incredible, incredible hurricane. It has dropped. It has dropped 50 millibars in 10 hours. I apologize. This is just horrific. Winds, maximum sustained winds are 160 miles per hour, and it is just gaining strength in the Gulf of Mexico, where you can imagine the winds, the seas are just so incredibly hot. record hot, as you might imagine. You know what's driving that. I don't need to tell you. Global warming, climate change, leading to this and becoming an increasing threat.
Yeah, good. Actually, you do need to tell them. You do need to mention that it's climate change because it's Florida, because it's America, because we've got so many people out there who have been lying for so long about what is causing this. That was the chief meteorologist at NBC Miami just days after Helene already wreaked damage across much of the state. But Florida U.S. Senator Rick Scott, who's up for re-election, by the way, this year in a reportedly very tight race against Democrat Debbie Mucarcel-Powell, apparently he doesn't know. Apparently he needs to be told what this is because he said this right after Helene came ashore.
What you're going to have to do is just have to understand storm surge is starting to happen. For whatever reason, we don't know why, we're having way more storm surge than we've ever had in the past.
Who knows what the reason is, but something is changing. Massive storms, massive storm surge. So we've got to figure this out. Absolutely, something's changing. The climate is clearly changing.
Yes, something is changing, Rick Scott. We don't know what. Yes, we do know what. We know exactly what it is. And it's thanks to people like you and your funders in the fossil fuel industry that it is happening. We know exactly what this is, Rick Scott. And you're about to face, your state is about to face another billion-dollar disaster, a billion-dollar tragedy. Meaning it'll cost more than a billion, but more on the lines of $200 billion. And that's on top of what happened last week. Milton's approach stirred memories of 2017's Hurricane Irma, when about 7 million people were urged to evacuate Florida in an exodus that jammed the freeways and clogged gas stations. Some people who left vowed to never evacuate again. But if they hold to that vow this time, well, this storm could very well be their last. Although Tampa hasn't been hit directly by a hurricane in over a century, other parts of Florida's Gulf Coast are still recovering from such storms in the past 2 years. The Fort Myers area in southwest Florida is still rebuilding from Hurricane Ian. That one cost $112 billion in damage back in 2022, and three hurricanes have thrashed Florida's Big Bend region in just 13 months, including Helene just over a week ago, and Hurricane Beryl at the beginning of August. $100 billion there, couple hundred billion there. Eventually, it's sounds like real money, huh? Maybe we should spend it in advance to prevent this from happening, to help prevent, mitigate the dangers, to help keep, well, Florida residents alive. Meanwhile, as they prepare for another storm in Florida, officials in the Sunshine State and about five others are still responding to the catastrophic effects of the last one, of Helene. Making matters worse is the fact that public officials are also being forced to contend now with widespread and persistent disinformation that is hampering relief efforts. And it is being spread by, yes, Donald Trump and Fox News. And right-wing Twitter, which is to say at this point pretty much all of Twitter, now known as X to some. Misinformation that suggests the FEMA is nowhere to be found and that the Biden-Harris administration has pretty much left folks out there to die, particularly in Republican-leaning areas, which is out and out false and wildly dangerous. Roy Cooper, the governor in North Carolina, took to Twitter and called it a, quote, relentless vortex of disinformation dialed up by bad actors and platforms like X or Twitter. A North Carolina Republican state official had to take to social media and plead for an end to right-wing conspiracy theories about Helene disaster recovery. Brian Buettler, in his off-message newsletter today, described MAGA's Hurricane Helene lies as, quote, a trial run for the election. Apparently, it all got so bad so quickly that FEMA had to put up a rumors page on its website just to debunk the nonsense and the lies coming from right-wingers via social media. These rumors are still circulating and are still dangerous for those struggling to rebound from Hurricane Helene. But as we pride ourselves here in a public as a public service journalism show, I was hoping to share at least some of these today from FEMA, from their rumors webpage that they had to post in order to respond to all of this stuff and nonsense kicked off by Donald Trump and Rick Scott and all the rest. But now with Milton headed to shore, I think it's even more important that folks here understand what is actually going on so they can help shut down the lies and the dangerous nonsense that many on the right, who I think have been hoping for their own, for years, for their own Hurricane Katrina, but with a Democrat in the White House so they could blame the Democrat. Well, they may not have Katrina, or they may soon, but either way, they're trying to blame the White House, even if there is nothing to blame them for. So just a couple of these, for example. Donald Trump has been claiming that FEMA disaster money was diverted to support international efforts or border-related issues. The fact is, according to FEMA, that this is false. No money is being diverted from disaster response needs. FEMA's disaster response efforts and individual assistance is funded through the Disaster Relief Fund. It's a dedicated fund for disaster efforts. Disaster Relief Fund money has not been diverted to other non-disaster related efforts. There's also been a claim that, $750 is what the Biden-Harris administration is giving to survivors to support their recovery, and that they will give no more. Well, FEMA says this, too, is false. This $750 is a type of assistance that you may be approved for soon after you apply. It's called Serious Needs Assistance, and you get it almost immediately. It's an upfront, flexible payment to help cover essential items like food, water, baby formula, breastfeeding supplies, medication, and other emergency supplies. There are other forms of assistance that you may also qualify to receive. And Serious Needs Assistance is just an initial payment that you may receive while FEMA assesses your eligibility for additional funds. As your application continues to be reviewed, you may still receive additional forms of assistance for other needs, such as support for temporary housing, personal property, and home repair costs. And yet, we've seen folks out on the Twitters over the past week saying, yeah, the Biden-Harris administration, all they're doing is giving $750 to survivors.
Which is interesting because, remember, during the Trump administration, it was also $750 for that first day. And he never said a word about that.
Because that's how the fund works.
Exactly. And Republicans have also stopped periodically any attempt to increase that emergency assistance fund that you can get from that $750 to something that would be more helpful.
This one is a particularly dangerous one that FEMA had to rebut. FEMA is in the process of confiscating Helene survivor property, according to this rumor. If I apply for disaster assistance and my land is deemed unlivable, my property will be seized. That is false, and it is really dangerous because it could lead to harm against FEMA workers who show up at people's homes trying to help them. But if they believe that FEMA might be there to confiscate their property, I don't even want to think what happens. That is another false rumor. I will link to the FEMA rumors page. The idea that we even have to have one, well, welcome to 2024. Now, this woman on TikTok, who explains that she is from Western North Carolina, perhaps the hardest hit region from Hurricane Helene, and she is a paramedic. She says in a video posted, I believe, on Sunday night that she is enraged from what she is now seeing online now that her power is back and she's able to see how the world has been talking about what is going on in Helene and particularly in Western North Carolina. This it was quite a surprise to her, apparently, since the power has been restored enough to see the way that these false rumors have been spreading on social media over the past week. I want to play you some of what she said.
I just got access back at my house to the world around me yesterday. And I've never made a post before, but I am enraged at the number of people spreading lies about the community that I live in and I call home. What I will say, the National Guard is here. They have been here since Wednesday, 2 days before the storm hit. They activated Wednesday. FEMA is here. They're set up. Their home base is Mission Hospital in Nashville, North Carolina on Biltmore Avenue. They have been here. They are here. I think there's some confusion about what FEMA's job is. FEMA is not boots on the ground. FEMA is not going into your house and searching for people. FEMA's job with the government, I'm angry, is to make sure that funds are allotted the way they're supposed to be. FEMA comes in and they assess what the need is, and then they appropriate those funds to the places that the need is. FEMA is not denying donations, technically, because FEMA doesn't take donations. FEMA doesn't take donations. They don't take money. They don't take goods. That's not their job. That's not what they do. So all these people coming on here saying that FEMA stopped me and said I couldn't, like, take my truckload of donations. First of all, we don't want people just coming in here. There's nowhere for you to go, okay? There is nowhere for you to go. Thousands of people lost homes. Those people are staying in all of our hotels. Those hotels are full. We have 35 active right now. Sorry, shelters for people. Most of those are at capacity. As they reach capacity, we build more shelters. Not build, but you know what I mean. Make space for more people. We're not building buildings. I don't want anyone to take me out of context, but we create more shelters. The Army Corps of Engineers is here. The Marines are here. I didn't even know that was a thing that they did, but they're here. Interestingly enough, there are people here from all over the country. There are people here from Canada. So anyone who comes on this app and tells you that we are just not receiving help, we are. Do we need more help? Yes, we do. We need help in the form of awareness. We need help in the form of monetary donations. Needs change. Initially, what we needed was gas. What we needed was hygiene products. Those things are going to change over time. My biggest concern is people are going to forget about this in 2 weeks, and we're not going to continue to have the support that we have. And what we have is great. I am grateful for the support we have. But anyone coming on this app and telling you that we are bulldozing bodies and the government is coming in and usurping our property, that is not happening. It's not happening. I'm here. Those are the mountains. I'm North Carolina. I'm North Carolina native. I'm a paramedic. I am telling you right now, please do not listen to the propaganda and the people who are using the death of our neighbors, our friends, and our family to tell you that this is some sort of political scheme. The government did not cause this hurricane. That's not a thing. Just stop. We're hurting. I mean, literally, as I'm talking right now, there's an osprey flying. I don't know if you can hear it. The one landed right there about an hour ago and dropped supplies. The government is here. And I think it's ironic that the same people who are fighting for less government and fighting to cut all of these programs are the ones who are criticizing the government and saying they're not here. Because they are here in the best capacity that they can be here. So if you're sitting at home with your running water, drinkable running water, in your warm, comfy bed or your warm sofa, just, like, shut the fuck up. You have nothing to say. You don't know what we're going through. You don't know what we've seen. We're not some pawn in some political scheme. We are people. We are people who have lost loved ones. We are people who are suffering. And, yeah. Stop it. I'm so fucking sick and tired of it. Stop it.
That's a paramedic in Western North Carolina, enraged about the lies being told by, yes, by folks on the right about what is going on out there in the wake of Hurricane Helene, where they're still struggling, even as another monster storm, Milton, is now headed toward the west coast of Florida. Let's take a quick break here, and we will go live to Asheville, North Carolina, if the radio and power gods are with us, to check in with Tom Sullivan, an Asheville resident and blogger at our friend Heather Digby Parton's website, who apparently only just got power back to his home over the weekend, a week or so after Helene blew through town. His observations on what's really going on and what, if any, political ramifications we might expect in the battleground state of North Carolina. That is next. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As Washington Post reported over the weekend, across the Southeast, false rumors and conspiracy theories have been flying about Hurricane Helene, which made landfall as a major hurricane about a week ago, causing at least 230 deaths in six states. The misinformation is adding to the chaos and confusion in many storm-battered communities, including many rural areas that still lack power even today. FEMA is also said in a news release on Saturday, the federal aid provided has so far topped $110 million. The agency said it had more than 700 of its staff on the ground in North Carolina alone, and that more than 1,200 search and rescue personnel were at work there, along with other officials. Nonetheless, pretty much since day one of that storm, and we've got another one heading toward Florida right now, Hurricane Milton. Nonetheless, since day one, right-wingers, including Donald Trump, have been out lying about the FEMA response to the disaster, claiming that nobody is there to help victims, that they've been stranded, that FEMA was nowhere to be found. And yet, the governors of all of the affected states here, mostly Republican governors, have said over and over again that, yes, they have been working closely with FEMA and have been in constant contact with the White House and the president. And yet, when you can hear finally from folks in these affected areas, in areas like Asheville in western North Carolina, once their power and cell phone and internet services have been restored, we are hearing a very different story from on the ground in those areas than what we're hearing from those who are using this as a political operation. Yes, including the former president of the United States. Joining us now from Asheville, North Carolina, where he lives in Buncombe County, perhaps the single hardest hit county among the six states devastated over the past week from Hurricane Helene, is our longtime friend and fellow blogger, Tom Sullivan, who's written for the Asheville Citizen-Times, Huffington Post, Bill Moyers and Company, and he can be read each morning covering all manner of issues at our friend Heather Digby Parton's Hullabaloo blog, at least when his power hasn't been knocked out by one of the deadliest hurricanes of the past 50 years. Tom Sullivan, it has been a while, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. It's nice to have my power back and nice to be back on the show.
And when did it come back? It only came back a day or so ago?
It came back about 5 p.m. last night.
So that's over a week since the storm came ashore that you've been living without power there. Now, before we get into all of this, because I do want to talk about some of the claims that Trump and his minions are making, but first, you're in Asheville, one of the hardest hit areas of all the six states where Helene came ashore and caused damage. How are you doing there? How are you doing today now with the power back on, and how is your community doing there today?
It varies a lot. The storm was rather capricious. The people who got hurt the most, of course, lived in the river valleys. And I'm not there. I'm on a higher ground, and my street was pretty much unscathed. Mm. But I've been to neighborhoods where every other house seems to have a tree down in it or a tree in the house.
Oh man!
But we're fine here. But along the river valleys, north and south. North, south, east, west. Mm. It's really horrible. I'm just now, because I was basically on another planet for a week without any kind of communications, I'm just still catching up with the videos that other people have been able to see who live outside the area.
Yeah, you know, when you say you're living on another planet, the first thing that occurred to me is, boy, that sounds nice. On the other hand, given what you have been going through there, I mean, I know the water system was pretty much out from day one in Asheville. Has that returned yet there?
No, that will not return for weeks. We are gathering flushing and washing water from springs and creeks.
Tell me what you have been able to see on the ground in Asheville and in the outlying communities where I know that they may have been hit even harder. Are you seeing government officials, federal officials, state officials on the ground? Is FEMA there, or is it like Donald Trump says that everyone in North Carolina has been left to their own devices and that they've been abandoned by the federal government?
As far as I can tell, that's all nonsense. And I've been getting, Digby was sending me some information and saying, have you seen this? This is what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And so when I got to a point where I could, get out, the roads were clear and there were areas I could check out, I went to check some. They're using one of the area high schools as a staging ground. Mm-hmm. They're using the high schools because they've got soccer fields, football fields that makes it good landing zones for helicopters. And so I went to a high school north of here just the other day, and trailer after trailer after trailer for housing relief workers, supply trailers. The helicopter took off just after I got there. It wasn't military; it was civilian. Mm. But I've got Chinook helicopters and Black Hawk helicopters going over every day, all day. So there's quite a lot of activity. We've got multiple sites around town where people are doing food distribution, water distribution, and FEMA sign-up aid.
What?
Where FEMA agents, FEMA people are on the ground and helping people sign up for that $750 mm-hmm. instant infusion of cash for relief.
Mm-hmm. In
and so
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in social media posts, this was last Monday, so just days after the storm had rolled through, Trump was accusing the federal government of, quote, going out of their way to not help people in Republican areas. He claimed that Biden, quote, left Americans to drown in North Carolina. He said in an interview that they're not getting anything. That's a quote. They're not getting water. They're not getting anything. Is any of that true? Now, you're in Asheville. I guess it's a Democratic leaning city for sure. But is that true in Asheville? Is that true anywhere in North Carolina that you have either seen or heard over the past week?
Well, that's certainly not true in Asheville. There are aid stations and trailers and relief groups. It seems almost like on every other street corner downtown. So there is tons of aid here. It's the most accessible city in the region. But the helicopter operations, they're going out into the remote coves. As somebody said today, people who had bridges to get to their property saw them torn out. People who didn't have bridges to their property now need them. And a lot of people are cut off that way. So it's mostly helicopter, military, people with, high water vehicles who can get through and to some of these remote areas that are still cut off. And there's hundreds of them. So, there was a guy... some guy from Florida complaining that he was the first person with a helicopter to help these people and nobody was helping anybody. Well, like, good on you for being the first one there. How many hundreds of other places were people helped that you didn't get to.
Right.
Because somebody else got there. And, you know, that's the kind of disinformation you're getting.
You know, I don't know how long you were. Well, I guess you were offline for as much of a week as a week or so.
Yeah, a full week.
Yeah. So when you did realize what was going on here, that there's this sort of huge sort of new big lie about the response to Hurricane Helene, when you learned that that was underway, how did you feel about that when you did learn? Because I've seen a lot of videos. We played one from that paramedic just before the break. I've seen others that I can't play on FCC radio. folks who were not happy about what they learned once they finally learned what people were saying about them and what's going on where they live, where you live, Tom Sullivan.
Yeah, well, you're saying that some of our Republican officials are telling people to just cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing rumors, and maybe this will get fleshed out later, that there may be a backlash to this. I'm not seeing enough of it yet, but it could happen. We had Tom Tillis the other day doing a press conference at one of these released staging sites, saying, uh-huh, cut that stuff out. Everything is working great. The coordination is superb. Dion Criswell from FEMA was at the airport earlier today with Roy Cooper doing a press conference with some military guys. And she was saying the same things that they're saying about on the FEMA disinformation page. And more than just being a threat to FEMA employees who try to help people, this disinformation, it's like, if they're scaring, especially the rumor about they're going to take your property, if people are afraid to sign up for the aid, they're not going to get aid.
Yeah.
And that's hurting them. So that's another aspect of it that she emphasized this afternoon.
I know that you wrote over at Digby's Place today about Brian Buettler's piece today, citing what has been going on since Helene as sort of a dress rehearsal for the sort of disinformation campaign that we should all start bracing for now after the election, if Donald Trump is declared the loser again. Does that feel right to you? Does Buettler have that right?
Yeah, I think January 6th was a dress rehearsal for the next January 6th. Mm. And this just puts a little more proximate to the election. So their skills are a little fresher.
Yes.
Which is not particularly encouraging.
No, it is not. Now, to their credit, the North Carolina State Board of Elections, they were out very quickly after the storm, announcing that they would be sending out mobile so-called elections in a box kits to affected areas to help register folks to vote and to process absentee ballots. Now, the city of Asheville itself, as I said, is a very Democratic-leaning area, but the communities around it in the mountains and so forth, I understand, are very Republican-leaning. First, I know you were in touch today, I believe, with a local county elections chief out there in Asheville. What did you learn from him as far as how they can, you know, be preparing for an election amid everything else that's going on with an election just less than a month away now?
Well, I mean, early voting starts next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having to scramble right now with the damage and the loss of power and water at a lot of the sites. They're having to scramble right now. They're not going to have a meeting until tomorrow basically, we were going to have 14 early voting sites open for 2.5 weeks. We will have fewer. How many fewer and what hours they will be run, that all has to be hashed out and on the fly. But the Board of Elections just issued a press release this afternoon, and what they're having to do is all the planning for early voting and the voting operations have to be submitted to the state board and then approved.
Mm-hmm.
And once that's approved, it's pretty much locked in. Well, they're having to be more flexible for this. And so they're allowing for, looking like 13 counties, they're going to be giving them a little more flexibility to change those plans on the fly to suit the fact that, some of the sites we were planning on using may not be available. We have we have 80 precincts on Election Day. Some of those may have to be combined, and all that's yet to be determined.
After speaking with the local county elections chief, Tom Sullivan, in Asheville today, do you have confidence that everyone in North Carolina, or at least everyone in Asheville, who wants to vote will be able to vote this year? Do you feel that they are nimble enough in the state, across the state, to accommodate this, you know, disaster that's gone on? And by the way, you guys just have put in a new photo ID restriction. A lot of folks, I suspect, lost their photo ID in the storm, in the wind, in the rain. Do you have confidence that voters in North Carolina of any and all stripes will, in fact, be able to cast their vote if they want to this year?
Well, that's the plan. We've got one of the best boards in the state. We've got some of the best voter turnout in the state. Our problem is we're not as big as Raleigh or Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a really good operation here, and we don't expect any other kinds of shenanigans, if you want to read into that. We will do the best we can, and we're really very effective at this. So I'm not too worried about that. But what your comment about loss of ID, that could pose a problem, and I haven't had a chance. This just came up. I haven't had a chance to read through what sort of flexibility the local boards will have regarding handling that problem.
On that, I might be able to help you, Tom, because while you had no power, I was trying to keep my own eyes on this. And apparently, if you identify yourself, if you don't have an ID, if you lost your ID, but you come from one of the affected counties where there is a state of emergency, you will be allowed to sign an affidavit. And I believe fill out a provisional ballot and then vote. And that should be counted. But of course, there's always concerns about provisional ballots. Those are easier to not count, easier to toss than real ballots. So that's a concern. But as I understand it, that is currently the process for those counties that will that are currently, I guess, under a state of emergency, which is a bunch of counties in North Carolina. In theory, folks should be able to vote if it's something they can even think about. Karen in Oakland calls in to ask, has Tom seen Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson anywhere, like tossing paper towels at storm victims? Yes. Is he out and about? People who don't know, he's kind of the loony, to put it nicely, Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, who is running against the Democratic Attorney General Josh Stein for governor this year. Has Mark Robinson showed up in Asheville yet?
I've seen a headline that he was out making some comments about the disaster, but I think it was something that popped up while I was completely cut off from comms, so I didn't get to see it. But I saw a photo and headline, but I don't even know where he was when he made his comments.
Do you? It sounds like you are doing well. It sounds like the community there is pulling together, even if the rest of the world is sort of, you know, going batty around you. But do you have any sense? It may be too early, I realize, Tom, but do you have any sense of how all of this may affect the presidential race this year? Any overall understanding of that?
Well, I think Mecklenburg got added to one of the disaster counties. That's Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Their voter turnout has historically not been as good as it could be. And I believe that some out-of-state groups and some of the folks here are being encouraged to go help with their voter turnout. And if they could improve voter turnout in Charlotte, that could turn the election, because
in favor of the Democrats.
In favor of the Democrats, heavily Democratic county that doesn't turn out. A lot of people there are recent immigrants, people who are transitioned through Charlotte for jobs and then out again. It's not quite as cohesive a county as Wake County, where Raleigh is, which is a government's the business. It's a company town. Their voter turnout is always terrific. Ours is always terrific. And that's been a weak spot. And they've got a real good program. They've got a new chair there who's raising a ton of money. And I think he's going to be getting a lot more help than they're used to seeing. And I've got my fingers crossed.
I got to get out of here, Tom, but last quick question for you. How can people help from around the world, around the country, around the world? Is there anything we could do to help the folks in North Carolina other than to tell the truth and stay the hell away? Is there anything you could use out there?
Yeah, people can donate. The problem is, I think I told you, I had to send my family proof of life photo just so they would stop trying to load up an SUV full of supplies that I can walk into the grocery store down the street and buy. We're fine. The people who need the supplies are the people that can't get them because they're hard to get to. But the relief groups, there are multiple 501 groups here. There's World Central Kitchen, Chef Andres's place. I've eaten his food. I've donated. I've never expected to be eating his food.
Unbelievable.
So there are other groups like that. One of our local groups can take money. So anyway, if Digby had a post someplace, I'll see if I can send it to you. Listed a group and places to donate to.
Tom Sullivan, Asheville, North Carolina resident, surviving the storm, keeping up the good fight no matter what. Tom, always great speaking with you, sir. Please stay in touch as things progress. We'll talk to you, I hope, between now and Election Day. You can find Tom's work you can find him on the Twitters at BloggersRUs and, of course, at digbysblog.net. Tom, great speaking with you, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Brad. See you later.
Thank you. All right, we got to get out. Thanks to our engineer, Wendell Handy, to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download at any time for free at bradblog.com. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We'll see you there until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.